Chapter 2, The Honeypot. Subchapter 1. Detta laid up in a deeply shadowed cleft formed by rocks which leaned together like old men who had been turned to stone while sharing some weird secret. She watched Eddie range up and down the rubble-strewn slopes of the hills, yelling himself hoarse. The duck fuzz on his cheeks was finally becoming a beard, and you might have taken him for a grown man, except for the three or four times he passed close to her. Once he had come close enough for her to have snaked a hand out and grabbed his ankle. When he got close, you saw he wasn't nothing but a kid still, and one who was dog-tired to boot. Odetta would have felt pity. Detta felt only the still, coiled readiness of the natural predator. When she first crawled in here, she had felt things crackling under her hands like old autumn leaves in a woods holler. As her eyes adjusted, she saw they weren't leaves, but the tiny bones of small animals. Some predator, long gone, if these ancient yellow bones told the truth, had once denned here, something like a weasel or a ferret. It had perhaps gone out at night, following its nose further up into the drawers, to where the trees and undergrowth were thicker, following its nose to prey. It had killed, eaten, and brought the remains back here to snack on the following day as it laid up, waiting for night to bring the time of hunting on again. Now there was a bigger predator here, and at first Detta thought she'd do pretty much what the previous tenant had done, wait until Eddie fell asleep, as he was almost certain to do, then kill him and drag his body up here. Then, with both guns in her possession, she could drag herself back down by the doorway and wait for the really bad man to come back. Her first thought had been to kill the really bad man's body as soon as she had taken care of Eddie, but that was no good, was it? If the really bad man had no body to come back to, there would be no way Detta could get out of here and back to her own world. Could she make that really bad man take her back? Maybe not, but maybe so. If he knew Eddie was still alive, maybe so. And that led to a much better idea. Subchapter 2. She was deeply sly. She would have laughed harshly at anyone daring to suggest it, but she was also deeply insecure. Because of the latter, she attributed the former to anyone else she met whose intellect seemed to approach her own. This was how she felt about the gunslinger. She had heard a shot, and when she looked, she'd seen smoke drifting from the muzzle of his remaining gun. He had reloaded and tossed this gun to Eddie just before going through the door. She knew what it was supposed to mean to Eddie. All the shells weren't wet after all. The gun would protect him. She also knew what it was supposed to mean to her. For, of course, the really bad man had known she was watching. Even if she had been sleeping, when the two of them started chinning, the shot would have awakened her. Stay away from him. He's packing iron. But devils could be subtle. If that little show had been put on for her benefit, might not that really bad man have had another purpose in mind as well, one neither she nor Eddie was supposed to see? Might that really bad man not have been thinking, if she sees this good one fires good shells, why, she'll think the one she took from Eddie does too. But suppose he had guessed that Eddie would doze off. Wouldn't he know she would be waiting for just that, waiting to filch the gun and creep slowly away up the slopes to safety? Yes, that really bad man might have foreseen all that. He was smart, for a honky. Smart enough, anyway, to see that Detta was bound to get the best of that little white boy. So, just maybe, that really bad man had purposely loaded this gun with bad shells. He had fooled her once. Why not again? This time, she had been careful to check that the chambers were loaded with more than empty casings, and yes, they appeared to be real bullets, but that didn't mean they were. He didn't even have to take the chance that one of them might be dry enough to fire, now did he? He could have fixed them somehow. After all, guns were the really bad man's business. Why would he do that? Why, to trick her into showing herself, of course. Then Eddie could cover her with a gun that really did work, and he would not make the same mistake twice, tired or not. He would, in fact, be especially careful not to make the same mistake twice because he was tired. Nice try, honky. Detta thought in her shadowy den, this tight but somehow comforting dark place, whose floor was carpeted with the softened and decaying bones of small animals. Nice try, but I ain't gonna go for that shit. She didn't need to shoot Eddie, after all. She only needed to wait. Subchapter 3. Her one fear was that the gunslinger would return before Eddie fell asleep, but he was still gone. The limp body at the base of the door did not stir. Maybe he was having some trouble getting the medicine he needed. Some other kind of trouble, for all she knew. Men like him seemed to find trouble easy as a bitch in heat finds a randy hound. 2 hours passed while Eddie hunted for the woman he called Odetta. Oh, how she hated the sound of that name. Ranging up and down the low hills and yelling until he had no voice left to yell with. At last, Eddie did what she had been waiting for. He went back down to the little angle of beach and sat by the wheelchair, looking around disconsolately. He touched one of the chair's wheels, and the touch was almost a caress. Then his hands dropped away, and he fetched him a deep sigh. This sight brought a steely ache to Detta's throat. Pain bolted across her head from one side to the other like summer lightning, and she seemed to hear a voice calling or demanding. "No, you don't," she thought, having no idea what she was thinking about or speaking to. "No, you don't. Not this time. Not now. Not now. Maybe not ever again." That bolt of pain ripped through her head again, and she curled her hands into fists. Her face made its own fist, twisting itself into a sneer of concentration, an expression remarkable and arresting in its mixture of ugliness and almost beatific determination. That bolt of pain did not come again, neither did the voice which sometimes seemed to speak through such pains. She waited. Eddie propped his chin on his fists, propping his head up. Soon it began to droop anyway, the fists sliding up his cheeks. Detta waited, black eyes gleaming. Eddie's head jerked up. He struggled to his feet, walked down to the water, and splashed his face with it. "That's right, white boy. Crying shame if there ain't no no-dos in this world for you. You be taking that too, ain't that right?" Eddie sat down in the wheelchair this time, but evidently found that just a little too comfortable. So, after a long look through the open door, "What you seeing in there, white boy? Detta give a $20 bill to know that." He plopped his ass down on the sand again. Propped his head with his hands again. Soon, his head began to slip down again. This time, there was no stopping it. His chin lay on his chest, and even over the surf, she could hear him snoring. Pretty soon, he fell over on his side and curled up. She was surprised, disgusted, and frightened to feel a sudden stab of pity for the white boy down there. He looked like nothing so much as a little squirt who had tried to stay up until midnight on New Year's Eve and lost the race. Then she remembered the way he and that really bad man had tried to get her to eat poison food and teased her with their own, always snatching away at the last second, at least until they got scared she might die. If they were scared you might die, why'd they try to get you to eat poison in the first place? The question scared her the way that momentary feeling of pity had scared her. She wasn't used to questioning herself, and furthermore, the questioning voice in her mind didn't seem like her voice at all. "Wasn't meaning to kill me with that poison food. Just wanted to make me sick. Sit there and laugh while I puked and moaned, I spec." She waited 20 minutes and then started down toward the beach, pulling herself with her hands and strong arms, weaving like a snake, eyes never leaving Eddie. She would have preferred to have waited another hour, even another half. It would be better to have the little Mafa 10 miles asleep instead of one or two. But waiting was a luxury she simply could not afford. That really bad man might come back any time. As she drew near the place where Eddie lay, he was still snoring, sounding like a buzzsaw in a sawmill about to go tits up. She picked up a chunk of rock that was satisfyingly smooth on one side and satisfyingly jagged on the other. She closed her palm over the smooth side and continued her snake crawl to where he lay, the flat sheen of murder in her eyes. Subchapter 4. What Detta planned to do was brutally simple. Smash Eddie with the jagged side of the rock until he was dead as the rock itself. Then she'd take the gun and wait for Roland to come back. When his body sat up, she would give him a choice. Take her back to her world or refuse and be killed. "You gonna be quits with me either way, toots," she would say. "And with your boyfriend dead, ain't nothing more you can do like you said you wanted to." If the gun the really bad man had given Eddie didn't work, it was possible. She had never met a man she hated and feared as much as Roland, and she put no depth of slyness past him. She would do him just the same. She would do him with the rock or with her bare hands. He was sick and shy two fingers to boot. She could take him. But as she approached Eddie, a disquieting thought came to her. It was another question, and again it seemed to be another voice that asked it. What if he knows? What if he knows what you did the second you kill Eddie? He ain't going to know nothing. He be too busy getting his medicine. Get himself laid, too, for all I know. The alien voice did not respond, but the seed of doubt had been planted. She had heard them talking when they thought she was asleep. The really bad man needed to do something. She didn't know what it was. Had something to do with the tower, was all Detta knew. Could be the really bad man thought this tower was full of gold or jewels or something like that. He said he needed her and Eddie and some other one to get there, and Detta guessed maybe he did. Why else would these doors be here? If it was magic and she killed Eddie, he might know. If she killed his way to the tower, she thought she might be killing the only thing the gray meat Mafa was living for. And if he knew he had nothing to live for, Mafa might do anything, because the Mafa wouldn't give a bug turd for nothing no more. The idea of what might happen if the really bad man came back like that made Detta shiver. But if she couldn't kill Eddie, what was she going to do? She could take the gun while Eddie was asleep, but when the really bad man came back, could she handle both of them? She just didn't know. Her eyes touched on the wheelchair, started to move away, then moved back again, fast. There was a deep pocket in the leather backrest. Poking out of this was a curl of the rope they had used to tie her into the chair. Looking at it, she understood how she could do everything. Detta changed course and began to crawl toward the gunslinger's inert body. She meant to take what she needed from the knapsack he called his poise, then get the rope, fast as she could. But for a moment, she was held frozen by the door. Like Eddie, she interpreted what she was seeing in terms of the movies, only this looked more like some TV crime show. The setting was a drugstore. She was seeing a druggist who looked scared silly, and Detta didn't blame him. There was a gun pointing straight into the druggist's face. The druggist was saying something, but his voice was distant, distorted, as if heard through sound baffles. She couldn't tell what it was. She couldn't see who was holding the gun, either. But then, she didn't really need to see the stick-up man, did she? She knew who it was, show. It was the really bad man. Might not look like him over there. Might even look like some tubby little sack of shit. Might even look like a brother. But inside, it'd be him, show. Didn't take him long to find another gun, did it? I bet it never does. You get moving, Dead Walker. She opened Roland's purse, and the faint, nostalgic aroma of tobacco, long hoarded but now long gone, drifted out. In one way, it was very much like a lady's purse, filled with what looked like so much random rickrack at first glance. But a closer look showed you the traveling gear of a man prepared for almost any contingency. She had an idea the really bad man had been on the road to his tower a good long time. If that was so, just the amount of stuff still left in here, poor as some of it was cause for amazement. You get moving, Detta Walker. She got what she needed and worked her silent, snake-like way back to the wheelchair. When she got there, she propped herself on one arm and pulled the rope out of the pocket like a fisherwoman reeling in line. She glanced over at Eddie every now and then just to make sure he was still asleep. He never stirred until Detta threw the noose over his neck and pulled it taut. Subchapter 5. He was dragged backward, at first thinking he was still asleep, and this was some horrible nightmare of being buried alive, or perhaps smothered. Then he felt the pain of the noose sinking into his throat, felt warm spit running down his chin as he gagged. This was no dream. He clawed at the rope and tried for his feet. She yanked him hard with her strong arms. Eddie fell on his back with a thud. His face was turning purple. Quit on it! Detta hissed from behind him. I ain't going to kill you if you quit on it, but if you don't, I'm going to choke you dead. Eddie lowered his hands and tried to be still. The running slipknot Odetta had tossed over his neck loosened enough for him to draw a thin, burning breath. All you could say for it was that it was better than not breathing at all. When the panic beating of his heart had slowed a little, he tried to look around. The noose immediately drew tight again. Never mind. You just go on and take in that ocean view, gray meat. That's all you won't be looking at right now. He looked back at the ocean, and the knot loosened enough to allow him those miserly burning breaths again. His left hand crept surreptitiously down to the waistband of his pants, but she saw the movement, and although he didn't know it, she was grinning. There was nothing there. She had taken the gun. She crept up on you while you were asleep, Eddie. It was the gunslinger's voice, of course. It doesn't do any good to say, I told you so. But I told you so. This is what romance gets you, a noose around your neck and a crazy woman with two guns somewhere behind you. But if she was going to kill me, she already would have done it. She would have done it while I was asleep. And what is it you think she's going to do, Eddie? Hand you an all-expenses-paid trip for two to Disney World? Listen, he said, Odetta. The word was barely out of his mouth before the noose pulled savagely tight again. "You don't want to be calling me that. Next time you be calling me that be the last time you be calling anyone anything. My name's Detta Walker, and if you want to keep drawing breath into your lungs, you little piece of whitewash shit, you better remember it." Eddie made choking, gagging noises and clawed at the noose. Big black spots of nothing began to explode in front of his eyes like evil flowers. At last, the choking band around his throat eased again. "Got that, honky?" "Yes," he said, but it was only a hoarse choke of sound. "Then say it. Say my name. Detta. Say my whole name." Dangerous hysteria wavered in her voice, and at that moment, Eddie was glad he couldn't see her. "Detta Walker." "Good." The noose eased a little more. "Now, you listen to me, white bread, and you do it good if you want to live till sundown. You don't want to be trying to be cute, like I seen you just trying to snake down and get that gun I took off you while you was asleep. You don't want to cross Detta. She got the sight. See what you gonna try before you try it. Show. You don't want to try nothing cute, because I ain't got no legs either. I've learned a lot of things since I lost him. And now I got both of that honky Mafia's guns, and that ought to go for something. You think so?" "Yeah," Eddie croaked. "I'm not feeling cute." "Well, good. That's real good," she cackled. "I've been one busy bitch while you've been sleeping. Got this business all figured out. Here's what I want you to do, white bread. Put your hands behind you and feel around till you find a loop just like the one I got around your neck. There be three of them. I've been braiding while you've been sleeping, lazy bones." She cackled again. "When you feel that loop, you're going to put your wrists right one against the other and slip them through it. Then you're going to feel my hand pulling that running knot tight. And when you feel that, you're going to say, 'This my chance to turn it around on this here nigger bitch. Right here, while she ain't got a good hold on that jerk rope. But—'" Here, Detta's voice became muffled as well as a southern darky caricature. "You better take a look around before you go doing anything rash." Eddie did. Detta looked more witch-like than ever, a dirty, matted thing that would have struck fear into hearts much stouter than his own. The dress she had been wearing in Macy's when the gunslinger snatched her was now filthy and torn. She'd used the knife she had taken from the gunslinger's purse, the one he and Roland had used to cut the masking tape away, to slash her dress in two other places, creating makeshift holsters just above the swell of her hips. The worn butts of the gunslinger's revolvers protruded from them. Her voice was muffled because the end of the rope was clenched in her teeth. A freshly cut end protruded from one side of her grin. The rest of the line, the part which led to the noose around his neck, protruded from the other side. There was something so predatory and barbaric about this image, the rope caught in the grin, that he was frozen, staring at her with a horror which only made her grin widen. "You try to be cute while I be taking care of your hands," she said in a muffled voice. "I gonna jerk your windpipe shut with my teeth, gray meat. And that time, I not be letting up again. You understand?" He didn't trust himself to speak. He only nodded. "Good. Maybe you be living a little bit longer after all." "If I don't," Eddie croaked, "you're never going to have the pleasure of shoplifting in Macy's again, Detta, because he'll know, and then it'll be everybody out of the pool." "Hush up," Detta said, almost crooned. "You just hush up. Leave the thinking to folks that can do it. All you got to do is be feeling around for that next loop." Subchapter 6. "I've been braiding while you've been sleeping," she had said, and with disgust and mounting alarm, Eddie discovered she meant exactly what she said. The rope had become a series of three running slip knots. The first she had noosed around his neck as he slept. The second secured his hands behind his back. Then she pushed him roughly over on his side and told him to bring his feet up until his heels touched his butt. He saw where this was leading and balked. She pulled one of Roland's revolvers from the slit in her dress, cocked it, and pressed the muzzle against Eddie's temple. "You do it, or I do it, Gray Meat," she said in that crooning voice. "Only if I do it, you're going to be dead when I do. I just kick some sand over the brains that squirt out the other side of your head, cover the hole with your hair. He think you be sleeping." She cackled again. Eddie brought his feet up, and she quickly secured the third running slipknot around his ankles. "Dea, trussed up just as neat as a calf at the rodeo." That described it as well as anything, Eddie thought. If he tried to bring his feet down from a position which was already growing uncomfortable, he would tighten the slipknot holding his ankles even more. That would tighten the length of rope between his ankles and his wrists, which would in turn tighten that slipknot, and the rope between his wrists and the noose she'd put around his neck, and she was dragging him, somehow dragging him down the beach. "Hey, what?" He tried to pull back and felt everything tighten, including his ability to draw breath. He let himself go as limp as possible, and keep those feet up. Don't forget that, asshole, because if you lower your feet enough, you're going to strangle. And let her drag him along the rough ground. A jag of rock peeled skin away from his cheek, and he felt warm blood begin to flow. She was panting harshly. The sound of the waves and the boom of surf ramming into that rock tunnel were louder. "Drown me? Sweet Christ, is that what she means to do?" No, of course not. He thought he knew what she meant to do, even before his face plowed through the twisted kelp which marked the high tide line, dead salt-stinking stuff as cold as the fingers of drowned sailors. He remembered Henry saying once, "Sometimes they'd shoot one of our guys. An American, I mean. They knew an Arvin was no good, because none of us would go after a gook in the bush, not unless he was some fresh fish just over from the States. They'd gut-hole him, leave him screaming, then pick off the guys that tried to save him. They'd keep doing that until the guy died. You know what they called a guy like that, Eddie?" Eddie had shaken his head, cold with the vision of it. "They called him a honeypot," Henry had said. "Something sweet. Something to draw flies, or maybe even a bear." That's what Detta was doing, using him as a honeypot. She left him some 7 feet below the high tide line, left him without a word, left him facing the ocean. It was not the tide coming in to drown him that the gunslinger, looking through the door, was supposed to see, because the tide was on the ebb and wouldn't get up this far again for another 6 hours. And long before then, Eddie rolled his eyes up a little and saw the sun striking a long gold track across the ocean. What was it? 4 o'clock? About that. Sunset would come around 7. It would be dark long before he had to worry about the tide. And when dark came, the lobstrosities would come rolling out of the waves. They would crawl their questioning way up the beach to where he lay helplessly trussed, and then they would tear him apart. Subchapter 7. That time stretched out interminably for Eddie Dean. The idea of time itself became a joke. Even his horror of what was going to happen to him when it got dark faded as his legs began to throb with a discomfort which worked its way up the scale of feeling to pain and finally to shrieking agony. He would relax his muscles, all the knots would pull tight, and when he was on the verge of strangling, he would manage somehow to pull his ankles up again, releasing the pressure, allowing some breath to return. He was no longer sure he could make it to dark. There might come a time when he would simply be unable to bring his legs back up.